because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God
bless. Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And this is Rewind, Wisconsin Ice Summary of this week in the Capitol. First extraordinary session since 1993, and they called it in 1993 to legalize the sports, or to talk about a sports lottery. Yeah. It goes from one person's idea, which we talked about a week ago, to the governor's desk next Friday, the Absolutely. Right to work bill, and then you have a Senate committee hearing, then quick gavel, and let's get out of there, and then a vote on Wednesday, 17:15, sends it to the Assembly. Assembly public hearing Monday, probably discussion Thursday on governor's desk a week from today.
Possibly.
Possibly.
Unless they don't drag it out or whatever. He takes some time, but yeah, it'll be there shortly.
Well, okay, then let's talk about all the attendant drama around this. You know, protests on Wednesday and Thursday, 2,000 people. Shame, shame after the Senate vote. A rotunda full of singers, chanters. How close a rerun to 2011, JR?
Well, it's fascinating. If it was pre-2011, we'd say that was a pretty good display at the Capitol this week. 2,000 people in Capitol steps, in the rotunda. 2011, you go, you know, not that big a deal. But what's interesting, if you look at 2011, the dynamic was different because, think about it, where's the biggest concentration of public employees in Wisconsin? In Madison.
Yeah, Dane County.
So if you are a prison guard or at the UW or a teacher, it's easy to come over on your lunch hour and go in the Capitol for, you know, a bit and protest. It's easier to come, you work second shift, come here first shift for 4 or 5 hours and do the thing, or come in overnight. Here you're talking about hard hat labor guys who are out doing projects in Fond du Lac and La Crosse and wherever. It's much harder to get those guys to come down to Madison because it's a long trip. You know, they're also busy on the job.
Right.
As one labor lobbyist told me this week, this had been in March or April, or April or May, there had been almost nobody here because they would have been like busy, busy, busy on the job doing stuff. They couldn't have gotten away. So much different dynamic. Other interesting about this is that the Democrats in the legislature were much less embracive, if you will, of the protests than they were 4 years ago. 4 years ago, they were in the middle of everything. The orange shirts, the fist in the air,
yeah,
all that kind of stuff.
JR, on Tuesday's protest, Barca, Mason, Shanklin put up a sign, Solidarity. Why weren't they out in front of that crowd?
There's a little bit of a dynamic of they need to do better in Chippewa Falls and Wausau and these rural areas of moderate voters who may have been maybe open to Democratic messages but aren't really embracing them right now. Those guys are looking at Madison going, shame, shame, shame. It's the same stuff as 4 years ago. What's changed? Democrats need to do better with those guys. If they are seen as the party of the protest, it's not going to help them in rural Wisconsin. So I think they still agree with the sentiment, but they're seeing these guys chant shame in the gallery going, this is not helping, guys. There's a way to do this more productively that can help our message and help win over voters, and that's not it.
Well, okay, thanks for saying that, because 4 years ago, Barca was in the absolute middle of the rotunda with all these protesters, and on Tuesday, he was behind a window in the Assembly Chamber holding up a Solidarity sign. Let's move on. I had one GOP freshman who's kind of a little bit worried about casting his first major vote on this issue. Tell me that Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald kind of imposed this on Voss. Agree?
I think the Assembly leadership thought there's no way they'll get it passed. Four months ago, there's no way they're going to pass the Senate because it's too fractured, too many moderates, too many squishy people. Fitz really pushed that bill through. He won support. Now, there may have been a few members who weren't really enthusiastic, if you will, about voting for that bill, or we didn't like some of the provisions, would prefer to carve out, if you will.
Yeah.
But in the end, he kept them all together and got 17 votes and marshaled that bill through.
Do you believe what he said? He said, we heard that labor was going to go up with ads in six districts, which include the districts of Harsdorff, Gudex, you know, and Olson.
Well, we did see a buy from the Guard Group, the WIIN, whatever it was, or something like that. We did see the buy information. They were going up. I never saw any ads that they actually ran. But yeah, that was happening. Now, was it going to be a huge one? Hard to know if they adjusted things because of what happened in the Senate, but that was coming.
Okay, let's listen to three voices this week. First, let's listen to a member of the Machinist Union who says, I told you so 4 years ago, so let's play that clip.
It hasn't been easy these last four years here in Wisconsin. We've endured some of the worst times that labor unions have seen in decades. And we just keep waking up to that same damn nightmare. 23 days short of 4 years past, I stood on these very steps of this Capitol on a cold winter's day and said to you, make no mistake, my brothers and sisters, if Scott Walker is allowed to crush collective bargaining for public employees in Wisconsin, it will only be a matter of time before the private union sector is attacked and the dominoes will fall. The dominoes have fallen, and all of organized labor is under a full-scale attack.
J.R. Fitzgerald, Senator Fitzgerald, managed this bill. Mm-hmm. He spoke the most. He talked about it as a economic development, sending a signal, as we just heard, that Wisconsin is open for business. Then, in his post-vote press conference, he conceded, we may not see any economic development upside for years. Strike you as a
well, interesting contradiction? Think about it. In the last 4 years, Republicans have cut taxes several times. They did tort reform, as they called it, back in 2011. I mean, they've really done a lot of things that they argue would prime the pump, if you will, for Wisconsin's economy. We're still lagging other states. Now, you know, what rank do you want to use? What number do you want to use? We're still middle of the pack to lower third, somewhere around there. If this doesn't work, what's next? And the argument can be made then, look, you've tried everything you've got in your quiver. You guys didn't do the job. So they really need, at some point, this economy to turn around and perform, if you will, to show that, yes, our policies were working. Now, what Fitzgerald seemed to be saying was it could be years. Well, 4 or 5 years from now, I don't think they get credit for things if they did it, you know, now in 2011. That's a tough argument to make. Like, much like the stimulus bill with Democrats, right, nationally.
Yeah.
We don't know for sure what that did or did not do. Okay. But the economy is back on its feet nationally, right?
Okay, now let's hear some clips from the actual Senate debate. So let's run those.
I would hope the debate would be in and around whether or not we think this will have an impact on the state's economy. And whether or not, as was reported in the paper today, Wisconsin's economy will continue to be sluggish. But there's a bill before us today that certainly sends a signal nationwide that Wisconsin now can be viewed in a different light than we were before. That if you're a corporation, if you're a business, if you want to locate here, if you want to expand here, this certainly sends that message. There will be no more important jobs bill in this chamber over the next 2 years than the bill before us today. Thank you, Madam President.
JR, we just heard Senator Fitzgerald tell his fellow GOPers that that'll be the biggest job creation vote that they will cast. But let's talk about the Democrats. How well have they been able to message on this issue? And when Senator Schilling was surrounded by her group and the workers, the podium said families first. Have Dems been able to do effective messaging against this?
They've been trying awfully hard, but one thing is interesting is I'm not sure they've quite got there yet to make the connection of when supporters say this is going to save costs, the costs are labor costs, right? I mean, that's the driving force in all these projects, labor. So I'm not quite sure or clear from talking to people, they've really done a great job of making that connection. They've been trying, but in the polls that we see so far, you know, there's a majority of people support right to work. Now, I think the worker freedom angle is kind of winning out right now. But again, with the polling, you know, it's hard to say if that's the way the question was worded or like what order it came in, what really is the sentiment out there.
Yeah.
Also be interesting to watch a year and a half from now when they go to the polls. Will people remember this? That's a huge
true.
Question.
Well, let's listen to the Senator Julie Lassa got pretty emotional. And so let's listen to her argue against that right to work bill.
I would hope the debate would be in and around.
Rather than finding the dignity in work that you all talk about, there should be fairness and what people are paid. If you work hard, you should be paid a decent wage. It's no wonder Governor Walker was talking about the American dream, because I'm sure his polls are telling him that people feel like it's slipping away. And it is, because the jobs that are being created under his administration and by the policies that are being passed in this body are making it easier for low-wage jobs to be created. And right to work isn't going to help them, because it really is the right to work for less.
Well, now let's look ahead. The Assembly Labor Committee, headed by Representative Jacques, holds a public hearing potentially 10 hours from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. on Monday. There's no scheduled committee vote, which means when the Assembly goes into session, they could just take the Senate bill, take it up without a Labor Committee vote.
That's the plan from Jacques. I talked to him yesterday. Was they don't plan to do an executive session because why? You don't need to. You're taking the Senate bill. You have to pass the same version, go to the governor's desk. So just take the Senate bill off the message and pass it, and away you go.
One more thing on this issue. The only GOP vote against it came from Senator Jerry Petrowski of Marathon.
Yes.
Now, he issued a statement saying, I've always been against this. So he is not the GOP's Dale Schultz of this session, is he?
Other than this issue, I think Jerry Petrowski has been a very reliable Republican vote. He said, I've said before I oppose it, I'm sticking to my word. He also noted he'd been a member of the union for many years. He also pointed out Ronald Reagan was a member of the union for many years with the Screen Actors Guild.
Okay.
For Jerry, it was the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, I believe, if I remember correctly. It's in his bio in the Blue Book. So that was an issue for him. Much like with Schultz, though, there's not a huge talk radio presence in Wausau. Mm-hmm. You know, southeastern Wisconsin, that's a whole different story if you're a lawmaker, a Republican who voted against right to work. Up there, maybe not as damaging. Also for Petrowski, all we hear is about how well he's loved up there, how hard he works the district, how he is everywhere constantly. I don't get the impression yet that anybody's going to try and do any retribution, if you will, for that vote.
I agree.
Plus, with Schultz, it wasn't just one thing. It was a litany of things toward the end. It seemed like Act 10 was the opening the floodgate for him for his final couple of years in office, where he went mining, these other issues. He now is like the go-to critic for some people about Republican policy.
And he's been a leader in transportation. Okay, final question, JR. How many votes does this, does a right-to-work bill get in the Assembly on Thursday?
I'm pretty sure it gets most, if not all, the Assembly Republicans. It's not going to be a huge drop-off. I don't get the impression. I haven't heard any rumblings from anybody about there's going to be a big drop-off. I don't think there's any rush because, unlike with Fitz, they know they have plenty of votes to do it.
Right.
And to be honest, I get the impression sometimes that some of those folks in the Assembly who are freshmen or sophomores, they relish the idea of a fight. They weren't here for Act 10. That inspired them on both sides to get into politics, either Democrats or Republicans. So for some of these guys, they want to see, they want to experience that. This is their moment to kind of get into it and, and feel part of that history.
New subject. Have you heard J.R.? Governor Walker is running for president. No, he's everywhere. He's on Greta Van Susteren. He's on Sean Hannity. He's a keynote speaker at CPAC, as we'll get into in a minute. At one point this week, earlier this week, there were three stories on the front page of Politico on him. It doesn't even include yours today, which we'll get in. And he's going off to the Iowa Ag Forum, front page New York Times, Washington Post. But let's land on what he told CPAC yesterday. Let's talk about this one quote. And by the way, from all accounts, this was his second home run. The Iowa Freedom Summit was a home run in terms of his audience. And you've been reading, he got great rave reviews yesterday from the conservatives. But the line that drew the most attention, if I can take on 100,000 protesters, I can do the same across the world. Now, he said that, and we all saw that. And then when he was asked to clarify it, he said this, that's the closest thing I have in terms of handling a difficult situation. Not that there's any parallel between the two, the 2001 Act 10 and ISIS, which beheads people. J.R., did the governor make a mistake yesterday?
I get the impression it's a poor analogy. If you look at like the evolution comment, you know, punting on evolution, or is the president a Christian, you can argue that the governor was taking a principled stand of these are trivial questions that don't really matter to the American people. What he's trying to do here is he's trying to make the case that even though I don't have foreign policy credentials like a U.S. senator who's been on foreign relations or a former secretary of state like Hillary Clinton, I have a background in leadership that shows I'm prepared for these challenges. He often talks up Ronald Reagan, right? Back in the 80s, he fired the air traffic controllers.
Traffic controllers.
That the Russians took him more seriously after that because it showed his leadership style. Walker's trying to shoehorn himself in that same kind of argument of, I've shown my leadership, and I took on these protesters, but it was a poor analogy by most regards. The other comments, what's interesting is, conservative media and activists rallied around the governor, like really said, this is unfair, they're targeting about this, about not having a degree, this is the that, you know, bad old liberal media taking on a real true conservative
fighter.
With gotcha
questions. Yeah. And the governor sent out a fundraising letter based on how he feels that he's being picked on. There's a different standard for GOP frontrunners like him. Go ahead.
Yeah, and this one you're seeing, though, some more conservative media going, you know, that's not really a good analogy. It's not even a good try. attempt, if you will, to prove his credentials, because it's a much more complex world than taking on protesters. And by the way, anytime you're putting 100,000 teachers, government employees, nurses, et cetera, in the same sentence as an organization that beheads hostages, you're making a mistake there. So I don't know this is going to, you know, really submarine him, but it was not a good moment for him in terms of the governor's great with message discipline in his prepared remarks.
Yes.
Off the cuff is when he's been getting in trouble lately, right?
Yeah.
He won't answer the Christian question because of principle. He won't answer the evolution because he's, we shouldn't be going there right now. These are the times that you have to be able to deflect a question like that or be better on your feet. It was in a Q&A session this came up,
yeah,
than what he's been doing lately.
Well, but JR, I want to ask you this question about a pattern that's emerging. The governor says something, and then when he's asked to clarify it, he tries to, you know, dial it back a little bit. And is the president a Christian? Well, I don't know. And then an aide issues a statement. Mm-hmm. Of course, the Governor Walker believes the president is a Christian. Is this a pattern of saying one thing and then trying to walk it back? Is this going to help him get the GOP presidential nomination?
What's interesting is the way that the conservatives have rallied around him the first couple of times. We're still, you know, hours old, this thing that happened yesterday afternoon. So the full impact might not be known for a little while, the next round of polling. But you are seeing a pattern of people rallying around him. Like conservative media, I've asked some folks, they believe that conservative media are not unified, that Scott Walker is the guy to run mm-hmm. for president for Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
But you do see almost unanimously when the question about not having a degree, not the question about the president being a Christian, they're all saying, hey, this is unfair to the governor. He's a fighter. Let's look at these credentials, not these trivial things. This one's a little more substantial, if you will, than the other examples.
Okay, but just to put a bow on this this one issue, one poll this week nationally, even though I think it was PPP, public mm-hmm. policy polling,
yeah.
had him leading, even though it was a real small survey. Yeah. Do you give that any credibility?
You know, they do automated polling, which is always kind of a take with a grain of salt. But
yeah.
it's still, we're seeing polls where Governor Walker is doubling up the field in some, like Iowa, and of national Republican voters. This guy, if he is not the front runner, he is definitely a front runner right now. There's no two ways about it. And he's in strong position now. He's building a good operation. We've seen he's hiring people in Iowa and New Hampshire. He's got a great organization building.
Right.
Can he maintain momentum? I mean, I think I saw a story this morning that Herman Cain was leading polls at this point, you know, in 2011, for example. So there's a momentum question. Can he sustain this and keep going forward? It's going to be a tough task.
Well, okay, next subject is congratulations. You wrote the Friday cover story in Politico.com mm-hmm. on the governor and his experience with John Doe mm-hmm. investigations, both when he was chief executive and when he was trying to survive the recall. But Politico's headline on your story, Scott Walker's Whitewater, that's a reference mm-hmm. to when Bill and Hillary Clinton stepped in it with that land deal back in Arkansas. Is it fair to compare Walker's survival so far of John Doe's to the Whitewater?
I don't know. As reporters often say, I don't write the headlines.
I understand.
But the point of the piece was to summarize for folks nationally, what is a John Doe? Remember, this is a unique thing, Wisconsin law, that we have John Doe investigations. It doesn't happen for the most part elsewhere. These are grand jury process, which we have in the books, but people don't use it. It's a much different process. It's been never ending in some ways, critics' minds for Governor Walker. So I had to explain, okay, what's a John Doe? And what's it been about? I mean, the first one was pretty clear cut. All right, he had aides, Wings County executive, doing campaign work on county time. That is cut and dry.
That's okay. John Doe 1, and it ended. Okay. And some people were convicted.
The loose ends of John Doe 1 became John Doe 2.
Right.
Which gives us a much more complex question of, okay, Walker was coordinating with conservative groups in the recall. Was it illegal? Was it express advocacy? Or was it issue advocacy?
Right.
I mean, is it parallel to, for example, President Obama raising money for super PACs, which are now the thing to do nationally? It's a much more complex question. If you look at what the Marquette polling, the first John Doe, fairly evenly split. Was it something serious or something just more politics? The second one, the number of just more politics went up, and the inferences from Charles Franklin, the polling director, was it had dragged on for so long, and it was kind of ambiguous.
And it's
ambiguous.
A more complex issue.
It's ambiguous.
The nexus between the governor mm-hmm. and his campaign and potential coordination with groups supporting the governor that want him to be one reelected and two survive the recall is the whole issue of express ads and all that. But
and there's this, I think the real kind of bottom line of this, though, is there's a treasure trove of documents from these Doe investigations that are out in the public realm.
Right.
Now, we've all looked through them until our eyes have glazed over. The national media may take a second look at this as Governor Walker ascends in the rankings, if you will. Will there be any attack ads? I talked to the Iowa State GOP chair, kind of warned that, look, if you, especially in a field of a dozen candidates right now, if you're going to go after somebody who's a front runner, our voters are going to be a little bit turned off by that because we want to win the White House back. We're tired of being, you know, not having that in our grasp. So that's a tight line to walk. Then one Democrat I talked to pointed out that, you know, Wisconsin media have kind of like become accustomed to, if you will, this stuff. We've covered it to death.
Right.
The national media, it may not be a yawn. So might there be an ad, you know, the ominous music, the dark headlines and the voice saying, you know, do you know Scott Walker?
Well, I just want to quote two lines. By the way, this is a very nice piece because it objectively summarizes the John Doe investigation. So I'm going to praise you by quoting two sentences. Although several former Walker aides have been convicted in two of these probes over the years, and neither has come close to bringing charges against Walker himself, point one. Point two, you refer to all these documents. There's been no smoking gun in the thousands of pages released to date. But that's to Wisconsin junkies like us. We don't know how the national media is going to take this term criminal enterprise, which prosecutors later walked back.
Yeah, it's, I mean, there's all kinds of stuff in there to dig into. It could be interesting for somebody. Kind of, they look, and if you're a true junkie, if nothing else, it is a fascinating display of how Governor Walker operated in 2010 as county executive and candidate Walker. This is a guy who was intimately involved even in writing press releases about the O'Donnell parking garage incident where the slab fell down and killed that 15-year-old kid. How many times do you see an executive in the middle of a campaign say, this is the release I want to write, and send it out to his aide and say, what do you think of this statement?
Yeah, well, let's wrap up this segment this way. What is before the Wisconsin Supreme Court on April 17th that's John Doe related?
It goes to several, they're consolidated several cases of one, should the case go forward? There was a judge who said, look, there's nothing here. There's nothing to support these subpoenas. I'm quashing them.
There's Judge Peterson in Eau Claire.
Yep, and there are a couple of filings from the unnamed petitioners that also bring up issues about the Doe. I mean, ultimately is, it could be a decision of the final death blow, if you will, for John Doe too. Now, there are some lawyers out there who have told me that this thing is going nowhere as it is. There have been too many holes punched in Wisconsin campaign finance laws. The theory of the prosecution is not supported by what's on the books still. It'll go nowhere. But this could be the final death blow, if you will.
And a federal judge ordered that his order on this issue be posted on the front page of the GAB website. Okay, let's talk about our seven Supreme Court justices. Ann Wallace Bradley is off this case. And who is asking that others get off this case?
The attorney, the special prosecutor, has filed a motion. Now, we haven't seen it because it's been redacted. It's filed under seal right now. At least one of the justices come off. We don't know the substance. We can guess, though.
Okay.
Because a lot of the justices have had help from the conservative groups. They're part of this, you know, effort, if you will, to help Walker in the recall. So is there a conflict there? We know under state law or Supreme Court policy that it's basically what? Only you can decide if you have to step off a case. And if you can reasonably say you can be impartial, you're okay. I don't think you're going to see a mass recusal in this case from Supreme Court justices.
Okay, new subject. Former U.S. Senator Russ Feingold ends his service under Secretary of State Kerry and signals in his thanking my current and future chief of staff. Little doubt that he's coming back against to run against U.S. Senator Ron Johnson in 2016.
Absolutely. He is coming
back. How does he do it? How does he come back after two or three years? The political landscape has changed, but I'm sorry.
He has an operation still in place. Progressives United have transitioned from his kind of political group to an advocacy group. You could use that as you have to do a lot of filings and rearranging of some things, but you could relaunch that as your vehicle. He's got to raise money. He's got to get back in the mix, if you will. He's been gone for a few years. But if you look at, like, Ron Johnson, the position that he's in, Republicans will tell you, hey, we won with Scott Walker in 2012 and 14. We've built a great operation statewide. Our ground game is much better than it was before. Scott, Russ Feingold's numbers are like there's a ceiling to them. We think we can protect Ron Johnson, though he's the most vulnerable, if not one of two most vulnerable members of the U.S. Senate.
But how has the political landscape changed since Russ has stepped aside for 3 to 4 years? He's been doing other things and doing pretty
super
well.
Super PACs, all the money that he used to rail against, that's a big thing now. Will he embrace
super PACs like
those things?
Like his Feingold and John McCain bill wanted to outlaw?
Will he embrace those? What's interesting, though, is that Ron Johnson, that operation that Republicans have that helped Scott Walker, Ron Johnson doesn't inspire the same passion that Scott Walker does. So while yes, there are more field offices right now in 2015 than there were in 2011, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. I don't know that that's what really does it for Ron Johnson. He needs to connect with people, and he's almost 5 years in and hasn't quite pulled that off. That's a danger sign for him. So there's an opening for Feingold. He just needs to get back in the game, reintroduce himself. And oh, by the way, Republicans, what they're lying this week, stimulus bill, Affordable Care Act, right. spending, you know, that's the same lines you heard in 2010.
Well, the impasse that we're funding the Department of Homeland Security, he chairs that committee in the mm-hmm. Senate. Does this impasse hurt him?
Possibly, but you know, the interesting thing is with Johnson and Homeland Security is, what's that? Its chairmanship is great. I mean, don't get me wrong, but what's it do for helping back in Wisconsin? What issue does he take up there that connects with the moderate Wisconsin voter he needs in a presidential year when turnout will be 3 million people, not 2.1 like it was in 2010, a much more Democratic turnout, much higher How do you connect through that? I mean, and I don't want to diminish at all being chair of that committee. That's a very powerful thing.
Yeah, but I'm going to test your memory. The last Franklin poll, number of people who didn't know much about or didn't have an opinion on Ron Johnson.
Roughly a third.
Okay. I was going to guess 25.
His approval and disapproval were both in the 30s. That'll tell you something.
Okay. All right. Finally, WisPolitics stock report.
Rising Scott Fitzgerald. I mean, last 4 years, what's the impression been that Scott Fitzgerald's led by his caucus, not the other way around, that he's got this diverse...
And or Robin Voss.
And this diverse caucus that he's like herding cats, and then he's got to answer Robin Voss is setting the agenda. This is an example of Scott Fitzgerald saying, okay, we're doing this. He promised it in December. We're going to take this up. He delivered 3 months later. I mean, he gets kudos from people like this is, you know, Scott Fitzgerald taking leadership of that caucus,
right.
pushing it through, working his members, all kinds of questions. Well, there are these moderates who are not going to like this bill. What's he going to do? Well, it turns out from what he told us, he worked with his members. He talked to them. He asked, what are your concerns? What can I do to fix this? What makes you secure in this? And he lost one person the entire process.
Okay, but I have a follow-up question. You know, he lives in the 5th Congressional District, mm-hmm. now represented by James Sensenbrenner. Mm-hmm. This rumor that this raises his profile in case
Absolutely.
Representative Sensenbrenner retires.
Absolutely.
Because I'm sorry to say it, but the congressman's wife has been critically ill. Do you subscribe to that rumor?
Oh, I think that Scott Fields has eye on that seat for a while. If you go back and look in 2011, they redrew the lines. There's this line between the two congressional yes. districts that went like this, so that Scott Fitzgerald ended up in one district and his brother ended up in another.
Then the assembly speaker, yes. yes.
So
in the Tom Petri district.
If you're a junkie, you have yes. noticed that. But yeah, I think that Scott Fitzgerald has eye on that seat for a while, or Congress for a while, knows this is going to help him. Look, talk radio really pushed right to work, and he won some fans there by doing this.
Mixed.
Rick Gudex.
Of all what those did members, he do wrong to end up on your mixed list?
Of all those members in the Republican caucus, remember what Schilling say? All 17 are the 17th in deciding vote for right to work.
Yes.
They will answer for that.
Yes.
Of those 17 members, who has the most to lose? Rick Gudex. Now, it may not be the defining issue of the race next fall. He won the seat in 2012 by 600 votes. He'll be up for re-election in the same district that has, oh, by the way, Ahern, I believe, a contractor in his district, one of several. A lot of hard hats. You're talking like there's no margin for error. Now, it may be a different race the last time around. He was taking on an incumbent. The presidential race is a little bit wider gap for Mitt Romney than it was between Gudex and the incumbent. So mm-hmm. maybe it's not that tight a seat, but still, very small margin for error. And this guy could have this be an issue next fall. I don't know if those guys will forget this. If you talk to labor lobbyists, they'll tell you those hard hats, they're not all 100% Democrats. You know, there's a good chunk of them vote Republican, unlike the ASMEs of the world and SEIUs. Those guys may remember this next time around and be like, I don't know. But at the same time, WMC, I will bet you money that group will do something to rally behind Rick Gudex next fall. The conservative coalition, if you will, that does ads, they will be there for him, so that should help as well.
Okay, and then falling?
Labor.
House of Labor?
You know, 4 years ago, it was a public sector's term. Now it's a private sector's term. They kind of got the gut punch, if you will. I mean, think about this. Operating engineers endorsed Scott Walker. They were sure to never come up. Boom. February, it passes the Senate, and it's flying through. I mean, they made a bet, if you will, that it's never going to come up, and they lost that bet. They're now being, if you look at public sector and private sector, it's another punch. Them, a waning influence, fewer resources. Now, you know, the flip side is proponents will say, hey, look at Indiana. They worked hard, labor unions did, and got the membership rolls to go up.
Yep.
But when Republicans talk about how this will save money, they're saving money through lower wages, right? So these guys may see less money. Now, the flip side is, if you don't want to be part of the union, much like with public employees, and you don't pay those dues anymore, might the extra money in your pocket say, you know, it's not so bad after all?
Manufacturing states, Indiana, right mm-hmm. to work, Michigan, right to work, and now Wisconsin, I
on
think,
the verge
by
of
a
it.
Week from Friday.
Yep.
Okay. Well, I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind, and you and I are going to spend the weekend reading Bob Lang's 559 summary of the budget bill.
I already have my binder ready.
I understand. Thank you.